through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Hey guys, welcome into Tom, Jake, and Stacy. Happy Tuesday. Look, it's been a two-week roller coaster for Seahawks fans. Now, first of all, the bye week was great. First of all, you had a week off. It was fun. We all got to relax. We all got to take it easy a little bit. And not only that, but you had the 49ers beating the Rams, doing you a solid in the NFC West. The Cardinals lost. The Packers lost. Everything was great. Everything was coming up Seahawks. That's what it was. And then this week, things couldn't have possibly gotten worse for you. You lost to the Cardinals. Then the 49ers win. The Rams dominate the Bears. The Packers win. And they all looked better than ever before. Jake, I'll start with you, which is like, help me feel better about this. Are we? Can we do that?
Yeah, I can try to do that, because the reality is that the competition is heating up. It's heating up real quick. And 2 weeks ago, as you said, we weren't sure. This show, we were talking about it. We weren't sure about the strength of this division, all the preseason hype around it, and this division wasn't necessarily fitting that bill. But now, after this week and what we saw from the Rams last night, the NFC West can rightfully claim themselves as the best division in football. It's clear. Three teams, five wins. The worst team in the division has four wins and playing good football right now the last 2 weeks and absolutely stomped on the New England Patriots, the 49ers did. All last night, I could not help but watch the Rams, and I couldn't help reflect on what happened on Sunday night with the Seahawks and what happened within this division, and feel like this game versus the 49ers is the most important matchup of the season. Now, I know, guys, that you're sitting there saying, Jake, I feel like you say that every week. Okay, I'm not trying to be Chris Harrison from The Bachelor, okay? But when you look at this week for the Seahawks,
will it be the most dramatic week yet?
Yes, it will be the most dramatic week yet. The urgency to right the ship should be at an all-time high for this organization if they want to remain in the driver's seat of this division. You have an opportunity here, if you're the Seahawks, to do a couple things. And I think that first, before I get into those, hearing this cut number two from Russell Wilson talking about how this loss on Sunday night, how it's not going to change or hurt their confidence and hurt who they are moving forward.
I think throughout the whole game, just the effort of guys, how we played, how we competed, how we battled, is a testament to who we are. You know, it's never over. We usually win games like this. That's the reality. You know, we usually win these close matchups. We've done it for years, and so... You know, our confidence and our vision and who we're going to be and who we are doesn't change.
Now, knowing that it doesn't change, knowing that this one loss is not going to deter them, detract them from the ultimate goal and how they think and how they operate, there's two things in my mind that they have to do to remain in the driver's seat. And number one, that's get that bad taste out of your mouth offensively and for Russell Wilson. And to show the rest of the league and to show the 49ers in this division, they show the Arizona Cardinals, in my opinion, but to show the league that you're not one to mess with. If they want to bring pressures, guess what? You're going to gash them. You got to plan for it. And that this offense is the one that you have to worry about. Great teams, they focus about themselves and say it's all about us. It's not about the opponent. And so for us as fans, us as media members, we look at that opponent, oh gosh, are they, you know, gosh, this is a scary matchup. But I hope that this Seahawks offense shows to everybody that you don't have to worry about this group, that other teams across the league and within this division need to be more worried about the Seahawks offense than anything else. And the last thing is, defensively, Can they get better with the additions of reinforcements? We'll see this week. We'll hear from Pete Carroll tomorrow about Jamal Adams and Snacks Harrison and any other players that are injured right now, Shaquille Griffin. But that is the only excuse that they have right now to not get better. Your only excuse is injuries. And hopefully when they get some of those guys back, that they can show improvement.
You know, I wasn't going to say this initially, but just to respond to what you were saying there, you know, it's entirely possible that this team could still go, you know, 13-3, 14-2 or whatever. But to think that they were going to be in the driver's seat the entire way, and I don't know if I thought that or not. Maybe I did. Maybe you did. Maybe anybody in the audience did. But that was probably a mistake. I mean, the one thing I thought for sure was that San Francisco was done. And they're playing out of their minds. I mean, they just went out there and embarrassed the Patriots. So I don't know where the Patriots are headed. They're 2-4. But
I mean, Cam Newton's shoulder looks like it's going
to
fall off.
Right. But we picked the all three of us, I think. Maybe Stacey didn't. I know Jake and I picked the Patriots to win that game. Okay.
We did.
About that. But in the division, look, they've come back to earth. The Seahawks are. They're on top of the division, but it feels like they're in the middle of the pack. I mean, the Rams' only quality win is still over the Bears. I just mentioned San Francisco. If I ask who's the best team in the division right now, it just seems like it's up for grabs. Seattle at the moment probably is, but let's try to look at it this way. Okay, if I were to rank the defenses, I'd go San Francisco, L.A., Arizona, Seattle. If I were to rank the offenses, I'd go Seattle, Arizona, L.A., San Francisco. The exact opposite. So, would you rather be the best at something and the worst at something in the division? I mean, the best single unit in the NFC is the Seattle offense. I don't think there's any question about that. Or would you rather be like L.A. and Arizona, where you're competent at both, but you're in the middle? Like, you don't necessarily excel at either. And I'll just point out that after watching the Rams last night, their approach really has changed. I mean, they're a more defensive team. They don't bomb it all over the place like they used to. Goff's running screens left and right. I don't know if that makes it easier or harder on the Seahawks matchup-wise, but let's think about that question when we're looking at the NFC West. Would you rather be the best and worst at offense and defense, or defense and offense, or would you rather be in the middle of the pack?
I think I'd rather be the Seahawks right now, because of their personnel on defense also. The Seahawks defense has been horrendous. Like, I'm not going to lie. The difference is there's the possibility to be better. And I know that that sounds blindly optimistic. It sounds like you're buying into coach speak from Pete Carroll. But how do you not think that when you have Jamal Adams coming back and you have Bobby Wagner out there, you have KJ Wright playing really well? You know what I mean? Like, it's not going to be a top 10 defense, period. It's probably not even going to be a top 15. He could come back this week. It's probably not even going to be a top 15 defense. But I'd rather have the best single unit in the NFC West, which is your offense, consistently capable of beating you, and the defense being inconsistent but capable of being better and good. The defense could, for instance, get an interception. There's a reason the Seahawks are number 2 in turnover differential, and that might have gone down since this past Sunday. The defense can force a fumble. The defense can, at times, make a stop in the red zone of 4 downs. It's shown the ability to do it, just not consistently.
Yeah, I would actually take that. And in most situations, I would say I actually want a more balanced team. Balanced football helps you win football games, and that is true, especially when you get into the playoffs. But this year, I think, throws things off a little bit. And I think this year I would rather take an explosive offense and have the best offense and a worst defense at this stage. And I think that the Seahawks are fortunate to be in the position that they're in right now to know that they have an offense that's going to be scoring 30 points a game. I mean, that is a difficult feat for anybody to try and keep up with. Now it's a matter of, can the defense close that gap in any stretch of the imagination? And if they can, I mean, this becomes an extremely difficult defense. I mean, we're talking about a Sunday Night Football loss where the Seahawks scored 34 points on a defense that came into the game giving up the second fewest in the NFL. So they can score on anybody. And they showed that. And I think that that's a tremendous asset. Now it just needs to be complemented by, you know, some semblance of defense.
You know what I'll say, too, is I don't buy into the relativity in the NFL. This team beat that team, and therefore you're better than this team. I see someone on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, 710-710, what worries me is that the Cardinals are the only good team Seattle's faced. I disagree. But also, if you're taking that route, you can say, well, wait a minute. We're worried about facing the 49ers when the Seahawks beat the Dolphins. It was their best game defensively. And the Dolphins embarrassed the 49ers. I mean, there's several different approaches you can take with that same line of reasoning. Well, I have no doubt the Seahawks would beat the Detroit Lions, who beat the Arizona Cardinals. You know what I mean? Like, it's, you have to take it week by week in the NFL. I do not think that the Arizona Cardinals are the only good team that the Seattle Seahawks have faced. The Seattle Seahawks defense shut down Ezekiel Elliott. The Seattle Seahawks defense still held off a Miami offense that has some weapons. I mean, this team has made plays. The Arizona Cardinals haven't been their first test. What we're saying here is they're certainly not going to be their last, nor maybe even their hardest. But I don't buy into that. Like, this is relative to that theory in the NFL.
I agree. It's not transitive in that way. Like, if A beat B, then C should be able to beat B. And I just said that wrong, but whatever. You know what I mean? I think it comes down to, like you said, who's healthy when, and also just individual matchups. Like, the Dolphins beating the 49ers, just because the Seahawks beat the Dolphins, that doesn't automatically mean they're going to beat the 49ers. Maybe the 49ers just match up better with the Seahawks, a better team, than they do with the Dolphins, or they did that day, or who knows. I mean, Garoppolo, wasn't that the day that Garoppolo was hurt, where they had to pull him out of the game because he couldn't get anything on
Correct.
His throws? Right, so,
yes.
I mean, not that I think Garoppolo is going to be the determining factor in any game, but if you go into a game with an injured quarterback, that's going to hurt you. So I agree. Just because, yeah. you know, and one team beats another, it's not transitive from week to week.
Yeah, and vice versa. I mean, the 49ers absolutely crushed the Patriots. Well, you got the best version of the New England Patriots in week two. You got the best version of Cam Newton, who was the healthiest he had been. You could see, unfortunately for him, at this stage of the season, that his shoulder is just not holding up. I mean, he did not look good at all versus the 49ers. And so I think, as you guys are saying, it's a week-to-week thing. And when you talk about moving week to week, and Tom, you were, you know, saying, I don't know if anybody was thinking that the Seahawks would keep the themselves in the driver's seat of the division. I did. Once you go up 5-0, you go 5-0, and you're in a clear spot in the division, those are opportunities that you can't let slip by. That's what bothered me so much on with the Sunday Night Football game, is that it was an opportunity to move ahead 6-0 and really truly separate yourself. And you have to take advantage of every scenario, because when you play as tough a division as you are in, every game is going to matter. And for them to get themselves back on track versus the 49ers this week, I truly believe that this is the most important game for them. They have to get this one back.
And we have a couple days to continue to preview that game and to learn everything we possibly can about this past loss for the Seattle Seahawks. This hour of Tom, Jake, and Stacey is brought to you by the Pro Club. Let's get to three questions.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 12 after 12, Tom Wassel's burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Enough with the "we got to protect the kids" nonsense.
What I meant to say before, by the way, was if A equals B and B equals C, then A equals C. I completely bungled that when I attempted it a few minutes ago. Sorry. All right, guys, where does Jared Goff, my boy, truly fall in quarterback rankings across the league? Jake, what do you think?
For Jared Goff, I think he is a middle-of-the-pack quarterback. I think he is. You could have him at 15, anywhere above 15, anywhere below 15. You know, somewhere in, you know, 2 to 3 spots of that range. He is a middle-of-the-road quarterback. He can have a good a day as anybody because of the system, because of the talent that is around him. But if things aren't going well for him, he is prone to have an awful night. The other thing is that I think that, you know, for Jared Goff, over the last two seasons, you know, last year and this year, that he has missed more guys, open receivers, than I've ever seen him so far this in his career, which is weird to see him kind of regress in that fashion, because in 2018, he was unbelievable. He had a guy open, he was hitting it. So I think Jared Goff is definitely the mark of a middle-of-the-road quarterback in the NFL.
I think he's a little bit better than that. But I can't tell if that's because of his offensive coordinator, Sean McVay. He's been great since, you know, they've been together as part of this offense. What I will say about Jared Goff is that he's on pace for some high career highs as far as completion percentage. He's completing 67.7% of his passes right now. That beats a previous high of 64.9%. That was in the year that they went to the Super Bowl. He's got a career low kind of touchdown interception percentage. He's got 12 touchdowns to just 4 interceptions. He finished last year with his lowest ever, but so far those 4 interceptions are pretty good for him. I think that Jared Goff, his ceiling is high. He so inconsistently gets there. His ceiling, though, is not nearly... I mean, he is not a top 5 quarterback in the league. And I don't care if there are Rams fans that hear that and think, like, that's not fair. Because there's also Rams fans that hear it and think, like, yeah, that's fine. We have Aaron Donald, though.
You know, his numbers compare favorably with Tom Brady's. I mean, they both have 102 passer ratings. They're both right around 1,700 yards, 1,900 yards total, 272 to 255 yards per game. I mean, they're in the same neighborhood. So if you like Brady, you got to like Goff. Hey, by the way, Stacey, wasn't there a texter that said they were going to send me a Goff jersey?
Mm-hmm. It was a Rams jersey. Yeah. I don't know. We'll see if it gets delivered.
Well, I was going to ask you, since you're in studio, if you wouldn't mind just, like, checking my box or something.
We haven't had anything sent yet.
You've been checking?
Hmm? No, we get emails if we get stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't been sent a package in a while. Next.
Number 2.
La, la, la. Oh, goodness. This question. Who's had a worse time with fan criticism? Ken Norton or Daryl Bevel?
I don't even think it's close. I think it's still Daryl Bevel. I mean,
really?
Maybe if Ken Norton. Yeah, I don't think this is. I think Ken Norton hasn't really faced the criticism until the last week or two. I think people have still tried to be patient, still tried to figure out where this is going and can they resolve this. I think now that you get past week 6 into this season, with the talent that you have and a continued need that hasn't been addressed for 2 straight seasons, I think that now it's something that people are starting to take problem with. But you look at Daryl Bevel and what happened in the most critical moment of a team in 2014, he was never able to escape that. I think Daryl Bevel has gotten a lot more criticism, even from players on his own team, than Ken Norton Jr. has thus far.
Yeah, it's frustrated.
Okay, they were way out of line, those players.
They were, but they still did it. They still did it. And he took a lot of heat from players, fan base. I mean, and eventually it led to him getting fired. So, I mean, he took a lot of heat from everywhere.
Yeah, the question is who's just getting more heat or more criticism, whether or not it's warranted. The answer is just who's getting more of it. I think Daryl Bevel, and it's not even close. I agree with Jake. I think part of that, too, is like the offense will usually have your most expensive asset with your franchise quarterback. It is easier to compare what you see from offenses versus what you see from defenses. It's easier for fans, and this isn't to say that there's something fans don't understand. That's not the case at all. It's easier for me, too, to look at Kansas City's offense and compare it to Seattle's offense. And those are the kind of criticisms that Daryl Bevel was getting, was like, Seattle isn't that creative. Seattle's wasting Russell Wilson. Seattle is, you know, zagging when other people are zigging and it's working for other people and not Seattle. I mean, it's just easier to pick those things apart versus on defense. It's sometimes hard to figure out what the issue is.
Well, here's the thing. Bevel at least had his defenders because he had success. I haven't heard anybody defend Ken Norton as a competent defensive coordinator. Like, maybe there are people who are being patient with him, but I actually defended Bevel on certain occasions, not all, but certain occasions, because he did have success. They scored a ton of points.
Yeah.
They had a different looking offense at the time. Marshawn Lynch, you know, whatever. And there was grounds to defend him. There's no grounds to defend what's gone on with Ken Norton so far.
None?
Absolutely.
He hasn't had any success.
Not even injuries.
How long can you use that as an excuse? I mean, I think that any time that you look at Ken Norton's
career. The guys that are
healthy
aren't doing anything either.
Well, you look at his career as a defensive coordinator. There'd be one thing if this was his first stint, but it's not. He also had two or three years with the Oakland Raiders, and that didn't go very well either. Ken Norton Jr., as a career defensive coordinator in this league, has been bottom of the league, has been in the 20s or below in all of those seasons. That's a trend.
Next.
Number three.
Stacey.
Yeah.
Equals Jimmy Graham.
I am Jimmy Graham.
You are Jimmy
Graham. Because I'm tall and imposing.
Yeah, as far as the show is concerned. And you also have nothing to say. No, that's actually the opposite of Jimmy Graham. Did you like what he did last night?
You know what I'll say is Jimmy Graham, you just give him some chances. He could do a lot more. I've chosen to die on this mountain. Like, I can't go back now. You know what I mean? Like, at this point, I have decided to take up this cause that Jimmy Graham did nothing wrong when he was in Seattle, and I have to commit to the role. This is my character now. I have to commit to this role that I've taken on, and part of that
accurately
means,
depicted it.
Thank you so much.
Not a hill. It's a mountain.
It's a mountain.
It's a mountain.
Why are you mad at Jimmy Graham? What did he do besides, like, be asked to block when you knew he wasn't a good blocker?
Yeah, it's a great question.
5 catches, 31 yards last night, including the interception that was tipped by Ramsey into Taylor Rapp's hands.
Y'all wanted to pay Jimmy Graham like a tight end and get mad when he didn't play like a receiver. That's what you wanted to do.
Yeah.
Jimmy Graham is innocent.
Free Graham.
He's actually been decent over in Chicago. They don't have a great quarterback. I think he's been fine, honestly. Like, he's, what, 33?
Feels older.
Yeah, he is older. And I do agree, actually, with you, Stacey, on this particular issue with Jimmy Graham here in Seattle. I think that the trade shouldn't have happened to begin with, personally.
Jimmy
the
Graham didn't ask up, to come here.
And Max Unger, you know, moving on from Max Unger, they were wrong in that evaluation. They thought that Unger was, you know, on the tail end of his career, that he wasn't going to be productive. He ended up being a very good center still for a few more years with the New Orleans Saints. And you're right, Jimmy Graham was not a traditional tight end. They tried to use him as a traditional tight end. And so I think that they missed that one overall. But, you know, hey.
Thank you, Jay.
Fans like to complain. Fans like to complain.
It's okay. I like to complain, too, about everything. If you missed the show, don't forget you can listen to it via the 710 Sports app, powered by Dubin Law Group. Mike Salk joins us next.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
Mike Salk joins us now, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. This hour of Tom, Jake, and Stacey is brought to you by the Pro Club. Mike, you, during the break, were mentioning something that I want to put you on the spot for on air, if you don't mind.
Yeah, let's go.
You were saying that part of letting Russ cook means accepting more interceptions. Are you saying you're expecting to have more interceptions? This is not I don't want to say an unusual occurrence for Russell Wilson, because 3 picks is always going to be one. But
yeah, I'm not expecting 3 picks a game, but if you want Russell to throw the ball significantly more than he has in the past, but you're not expecting the interception rate to either stay the same or go up, I don't know why you would assume that. I mean, the chances are he's going to throw more picks. I think he's on pace for 16 interceptions this year, which would be his most as a pro. So it's not necessarily a bad thing. It doesn't mean that they shouldn't be letting Russ cook, so to speak. But he is, you know, one of the necessary trade-offs. Life's about trade-offs. And one of the necessary trade-offs to throwing more is that you might want to start expecting more picks. Look at two of the ones that he threw so far this year have been inside the five-yard line, right? He's thrown three really in the end zone, two where the ball started inside the five. In the past, would they have been throwing those balls, or would they have been maybe running them and trying to bull their way into the end zone with Chris Carson, or before that Marshawn Lynch or Rawls or whoever it might have been? That was much more their style. Now, that's not to say that those guys wouldn't have fumbled. They might have turned the ball over a different way. I don't think the Seahawks have a fumble yet this year. So when you run the ball less and throw the ball more, there's a pretty decent expectation that fumbles may go down and interceptions may go up. So I'm not, this isn't like a bold, brash, negative take. It just seems to make, it's not even advanced statistics. It's like very, very basic math. Throw the ball more and you're probably going to have to accept more picks.
So, Salk, you look at this defense right now and you wonder where the answers are, right? What's the answers? What are the things that they can do? How can this group move forward and get better legitimately?
Defense?
And one of the people defensively, yeah. And you look at what, I mean, what else could I be talking about here in that description?
The offense. Why isn't Russell better than he is, Jake? This is all Russell's fault. Let's attack him.
But you look at Bobby Wagner, right? $18 million. And I think he's a very, very good player. I'm not attacking Bobby. But it seems to be a situation where you're paying this guy and you haven't necessarily built around him, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying.
Has that been the right call, or is that what, or is this part of the problem that they find themselves in?
Yeah, we got deep into this Brock and Salk podcast, which will come out tonight. And I asked Brock a hard question, and it really is a question, because I said to you yesterday as well, Jake, I'm not sure I'm qualified to know the answer. Is Bobby a good player still? Not is Bobby an $18 million player. Is he still a good player? And Brock says yes. And I think you would probably say yes as well, that he is an average good linebacker. But if you came down from the planet Mars and you started watching him, I don't know that you'd come away with that if you watched the Arizona game. I didn't. I came away going, what the heck is going on with Bobby Wagner, a guy they committed $18 million a year to be their captain, their impact player. And one of the challenges of choosing Bobby as your impact player over Frank Clark or over somebody who plays a different position is that middle linebackers are, I would say, a more reliant position on other people around them, right? Kind of like wide receivers are, right? You need to have defensive hogs in front of you, and you need to have defensive ends in front of you, setting an edge and tying up blockers so that you can flow and make plays. And when you look at the best linebackers, middle linebackers of all time, it's always been the case, right? Ray Lewis, you got Haloti Ngata and all the big guys he had in front of him. Right now, who's the best in the game? Well, Brock was saying it's Fred Warner. Okay, well, if it's Fred Warner, look at the guys that he has in front of him in San Francisco. Luke Kuechly, for all those years, had really good guys in front of him in Carolina. I mean, and when Bobby Wagner was at his best, Seahawks were always very good to great along the defensive front. Well, they're not now. They're not. And we knew this was going to be a problem going into the year, and guess what? It's a problem. So either Bobby Wagner is not as good as he used to be because he has slipped in some way, which is possible, or Bobby Wagner is not as good as he used to be because they didn't do an appropriate job of building around him. They spent $18 million on a middle linebacker and then chose to spend $7 million on a third tight end? Why? Greg Olsen is fine. I like Greg Olsen. It's not a shot at him. You've got like nine other guys who can do that. He's that much better than Luke Wilson. He's that much better than Jacob Hollister. He's that much better than Will Disley. He's that much better than somebody else you could have found to play tight end. Swoops. I mean, like, this has not been a problem for them. Why did you need to spend $7 million on him while your defensive tackle and defensive end positions are not good enough to benefit the best player on your defense and probably the second best player on your team, certainly the guy you're paying the second most amount of money to? I just don't get it. I love Russ. I really do. I love Russell Wilson. He's my favorite quarterback. When he runs the way he did the other day, I love it. You know what Russ isn't? And he's proven it now once in the offseason and again now in the regular season with Antonio Brown. He's not a personnel guy. I don't want Russ any part of him. I don't want him near personnel.
That decision about Greg Olsen doesn't get made unless John Schneider and Pete Carroll think it works too.
True. You're right.
You don't get to blame Russell Wilson when it doesn't.
I understand that. That is a fair point. But I also do. I can blame John Schneider and Russell Wilson for advocating. You didn't need Luke. You didn't need him. You didn't need Greg Olsen. Was that really? Can you imagine where this team would be without Greg Olsen? Right where they are now, they'd be fine. You just use Will Disley.
Maybe they invest in another Benson Mayoa. I don't know. I mean, the way that they are and the way that they don't like to spend money, I don't know. I don't know how that money is invested.
Well,
I mean, that's the part that I'm
at least you'd have
I'm
a second Benson Mayoa. I mean, at least you'd have something. You're right. That those are fair questions, Jake. What they would have done with that $7 million is a very fair question. But there were guys. I mean, there were defensive tackles, there were defensive ends, there were players that were available.
Yep.
You could have either taken that $7 million plus what you gave to Mayoa and gone after somebody very good, or you could have tried to throw multiple players at the problem and gone that way. But there were options. There were options. The defense, Jim Moore pointed this out in a tweet last night. Did you see Jim's tweet? They're 32nd in the league in giving up yards. They're giving up 470-something yards a game. The next worst, which is Atlanta, is at 420. They're giving up more than 50 extra yards a game, which for the Seahawks I know is only a play or two. But for most teams, 50 yards is a lot. It's half a football field. The Seahawks give that up in their sleep. Sorry.
So why didn't they?
I don't know, because you got to let Russ cook.
No,
because Russ needs so many more weapons.
No, that's not why.
It is.
That's
because
not
of weaponry.
Why. Mike, you think that John Schneider, the Seahawks entered the NFL offseason, this past offseason, with among the most salary cap space in the league. You think that they looked and they thought, we have to let Russ cook. We have to do this.
Yeah.
Despite knowing that their defense was bad. You think
yes.
they chose not to get defensive ends because Russell Wilson wanted Greg Olsen.
Yes.
You think that's why?
Yes.
Then John Schneider should be on the blaming block right now.
He is.
You're a general manager. Make a different decision.
They're both on there. But if Russ is putting the screws to them and saying, if you don't bring me what I need, then I'm going to start becoming a problem here eventually. I want to cook. I need weapons. I need this. I need that. Eventually, they're going to. He's their best player. You got to kowtow to that a little bit. You have to cater to him.
I'm afraid of Russell Wilson.
I do.
You do?
Yeah. I have no evidence of that.
Yeah.
I'm not basing that. It's not a report. That's not information.
Russell Wilson's never going to tank or make this team lose. He's more obsessed with winning than anyone else.
I understand that, but he wants to win while he is the guy. Like, he wants to win by cooking. They've been winning. He wanted to win by cooking. Now he's the MVP frontrunner. It's working out great for him. And it's working out well for the team, by the way. They're 5-1. They're off to a great start. They absolutely could have won that game on Sunday night. They could be 6-0. So it's not necessarily all criticism. But when you're looking at the defense and why it's struggling, look no further than letting Russ cook.
I want to keep this conversation going, but we can't.
I'll be back tomorrow, I promise.
All right, well, speaking of this defense, Pete Carroll was asked to evaluate Ken Norton Jr.'s job through 6 weeks. You can hear what he had to say next. This is Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
Welcome back into Tom, Jake, and Stacey. Tom, you asked a really interesting question when we opened up our show. We do three questions every single day at 12:12. And you said, basically, like, who is going to get more criticism or blame if you look at Ken Norton Jr. or Darrell Bevell when he was here? And both Jake and I settled on Bevell. We thought that just given the history of where the team was at the time and how Russell Wilson was being used and comparing to other offenses, that might be one. That's not to say, though, that it's not a very fair question because, and you pointed this out, Ken Norton Jr. is getting a lot of it right now. And a lot of the performance of the defense, which is historically bad, feels inexcusable. So, here's the question we're going to ask ourselves right now, and we open that conversation to you guys on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, 710-710. Who deserves blame for the Seahawks' lackluster defense? Is it injuries? You don't have Jamal Adams. Or is it something bigger than that? Is it scheme? Is it coaching? What's going on here? So I will get you guys caught up very quickly with the latest on this as far as what Pete Carroll has to say. And cut number three right here, Carroll was asked about Ken Norton Jr. and had this to say.
I'm in there too with them, so I'm all part of that, and I'm not separating from anything here. That we have to keep working to make put our players in the best positions to be aggressive and to be effective, and we need to help them more in our pressure. And we did not try to get after them very much last night. We didn't. That was not part of the plan going in. And when we needed it, we needed to adjust. And I wish I would have got that done. Kenny and I are in that working that stuff out.
Jake, how accountable is Pete Carroll here for this defense?
I'm sorry. I have a really hard time with that cut. Now, I appreciate Pete's, you know, candor, but at the same time, here, there's a couple things in there that I'm going, huh? You know, when first, you know, talk about how, you know, where the plan was to dial up more pressure, the plan was to dial up more blitzes, and they didn't. And at some point, how do you go into that that situation and look at your defense and look at how they're not being successful, sitting back and allowing things to big plays, allowing them to continue to drive down the field, and you're going to sit back and get even more conservative. You're going to sit back and actually get softer and softer in your coverage as the game progresses. And if that was part of the plan, how do you not make that adjustment in the middle of the game? I think that that's a huge mistake and a huge error. The other side of that as well is that I, you know, at some point, saying that we're working really hard with our guys to get them in the right spots is not going to be a good enough answer. And I don't know if right now, here in week six, after they're 5-1, that that's the time. But I think we're pretty close if we're not already there. And this defense needs to get better and get better in a hurry, because allowing the most yards in NFL history is a tremendous factor into how this defense has not been able to perform and how you lose after scoring 34 points.
Would you mind if we jumped ahead to
number
four here?
Yeah, let's do it.
Just him being optimistic.
My assessment is that we're working really hard with our guys to get them in the right spots. I'd really like to feel the continuity of everybody that we can count on. We're not quite there yet. And I really think that there's, because of the intent and the focus and the guys playing hard and running and hitting, that we're going to make a turn. And we're going to turn for the better, and it's going to make a big difference in this season.
There's this thing that people who are heads of, say, companies or head coaches, anybody who's in a position of leadership, there's this thing that they do when things don't appear to be going right, where they just put forth this optimism, right? Now, Pete Carroll's known for that anyway. He does that anyway. But does that optimism reach a point of stubbornness where, you know what, maybe I'd rather hear him acknowledge how bad things are rather than just telling me how he just thinks it's going to get better based on nothing? Like, that actually makes me feel a little bit worse.
But what if he really does think it'll get better? Like, I think he believes that
dangerous.
It will get better. Why is it? But hear me out. What if Jamal Adams coming back is enough to make it? It won't be a top half of the league defense. Is enough to make it not worst? What if that is enough?
Well, with Jamal Adams can still go out there and make plays. I mean, that's what I'm hoping for, believe me. But, I mean, look, they were still giving up record-setting numbers even when he was out there, I think, or close to it. I mean, the giving up all this yardage didn't just start when he left. Mm-hmm. Now, they won games, and he clearly affected games, so that's what they're going to need. Look, they're a defense predicated on big plays. We've said it every single week, and they didn't get enough big plays. You know what happened on Sunday is they made some big plays, but those big plays negated some of Russell's mistakes. So instead of those big plays turning into a positive, it brought them back to even.
Like a net
right?
zero.
Exactly right. That's exactly right. Net zero
instead
of a gain. And then when Russ threw the pick in OT, they just didn't have that one last big play in them, because all Arizona needed was, what, like 20 yards to get into field goal range. It was basically over.
Right.
So, that's why they lost. Otherwise, this thing about giving up all this yardage, it feels like they can withstand it to me.
Well, it does, unless you're consistently being put in a bad position. And so far, although the offense is leading the league in points scored, they have consistently been playing in nail-biter games, right? And it shouldn't have to be that way if you're the number one scoring offense. Now, many people have referenced, well, what about the Kansas City Chiefs last year? They struggled early on defensively. They put it all together, and they were a better unit at the end of the season and through the Super Bowl. That's what you have to hope happens. And I think, Stacey, to your point, Pete Carroll's trying to speak it into existence that, hey, we're not panicking. All is not lost on our end. We feel positive about that we can improve. I think that that's very legitimate. And that's a Pete Carroll approach that has paid off for him over the years. My one concern about this is, have they hit a wall? Have they hit a wall and that there's nobody to bounce ideas off of? There's nobody to hold, you know, Pete Carroll accountable in the sense of coming up with new ideas and being more creative and finding solutions.
What would
right?
be a new
and
idea?
Instead of just saying, hey, here's a solution, just let's just stay the course, right? So yeah. That is a fear. I'm not saying that that's what I necessarily believe is the case, but that's a fear that I have right now, that there might be this wish and hope that we get better, yet you don't really have any answers for that. And Stacey, if I had the answers, I wouldn't be sitting here right now on Sports Talk Radio. I'd be in that building and you know, getting it dialed up and corrected. But that's the issue that you're looking at here with this group defensively, is you just hope that they can find that answer and that they have enough. There's enough think tank in that defensive staff where they can grow, they can bounce ideas, they're willing to accept that criticism and blame and move forward with what they need to do.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point, Jake, because I think that Pete Carroll, again, there's an aspect to him that will always protect the team. They could go out, put up 0 points, get beat 64-0, and he'd be like, no, I mean, you really hate to see this. We've got too much talent to do this. We're going to have a tough tell the truth Monday, and we're all going to be honest about it. Like, he will never drag the team. I also think that while he's very unhappy with this defense, I think he really does think that, like, Jamal Adams can come back and help, that Rashim Green can come back and help. I think he has full faith in the draft and free agent and trade acquisitions this team has made, Jake. So I think it's an important point to make, is like, well, who tells him it isn't working? And it's hard to be that person when you're talking to a head coach in charge of personnel also. You know, I think that anyone telling him no would feel like, well, who am I to tell Pete Carroll no? But it's a really tough part of coaching. This is another aspect to a successful program that other programs have been able to move by, is like, who questions the head coach?
From the 360, thank God for Jake, the only one on the station not afraid to boldly criticize this horrible defense and acknowledge the coaching blindness. Ho, ho, ho! That is so off base. Everybody on this station has thoroughly ripped the defense at one time or another. Jake is definitely not alone.
I think Jake's not afraid to go after coaching, though. I hesitate
to
question.
We've all ripped
coaching.
Norton. Everybody has, though. I mean, I'm talking all three of us across the station. Like, at one point or another this season, I mean, the only excuse I can make for them is that it hasn't mattered, because A, they've made some big plays, and B, the offense is made up for it. If the offense is that good, then what does it matter how many yards you're giving up? But if this continues to be a problem and the offense, you know, hiccups, then we'll criticize it more.
One thing I think Jake, to his credit, is not afraid to do is to have awful, awful ice cream takes. He has, you know, defended just to the end degree.
Hold on.
Rainbow Sherbert, Jake, I'm so sorry. We have to go to a break here, but that'll just be the final word. Curtis, if you could pod down, Jake, please. Thank you so much.
Curtis, you too?
Oh, no, never mind.
You're in on this? I mean, how dare you?
All right, you guys.
I mean, unbelievable.
Well, listen, you know, Jake, you know, poor ice cream opinions or not, you and Tom both make really good points about this defense. One thing, to play a little bit of a devil's advocate, are the injuries, and we are going to get to those, but here's where we're going to get to first, and the two are related. Pete Carroll, you know, while we're talking about it, these 5 weeks are going to test Russell Wilson and his MVP campaign, but it's not for the reasons we thought they would. We'll tell you why next.